Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With the Signal One release of Red Rock West, I thought, instead of just giving you guys a little 30-second ad for it, I would have a chat with some of the contributors to the special features on this disc. So we have Mark Searby. I would like to say hello, Mark.
Hello.
And we have Ian Schultz, who wrote the booklet for this. Ian, welcome back to the podcast. So, yeah, I just wanted to basically, with this chat, just give people, as Mark said off air, a behind the scenes to the behind the scenes. This is real meta. This is a layer beyond the layer. So let me start with you. Like, when did you, what was your first kind of introduction to Red Rock West as a film?
I must have just, like, the combination of the actors, I guess, at some point. And I was like, oh, a film noir with neo-noir western with Nicolas Cage and Dennis Hopper and Flynn Boyle. And I was like, sold.
What about yourself, Mark? Did you see it on the initial release at all?
I don't think I did, to be honest with you. I've got vague recollection of seeing it while I was at college when I was doing media studies. So I because where I went to college was in Nottingham, so there was a lot of second run cinemas and ones that were showing older movies. I have a vague recollection of going to see it then, but I mean, that was late 90s and I don't think I had seen it since then.
If I may be wrong in thinking this, but probably didn't get a first run release here anyway in cinemas, did it? Because it kind of
no, it did. There's like proper movie posters for it. So I think in Europe it was a theatrical release.
Ah, it was America that was a bit more kind of tumultuous, like came to be in a tumultuous way, right? It was originally supposed to be a straight to VHS film and then the rights got bought by somebody else and then kind of turned, like kind of found its second life, right? Like later on down the line.
Yeah, what happened was Propaganda, who financed it, didn't really have much hope in it, and then it was submitted to Toronto, I believe, and then it played really well there, and I think it played in France as well by that point, and it played really well, and this guy in San Francisco was like, let's release it theatrically, although it had already been sold to HBO, and it was like, so what? It's a good film. I want to play it.
Amazing. Yeah. Like almost like simultaneous release, like back in the early 90s.
Well, the same thing happened with Last Seduction as well.
Yeah. Seems to be the John Dar way. Mark, so tell us how you got involved in this project. Like what things on the disc can people find that you contributed to?
I mean, just going back to it, I have done a few projects with Signal One in the past. So I've done special features for Three Faces of Eve, Halls of Montezuma, Let's Make Love, which is the Marilyn Monroe movie, Hudson Hawk as well. So, you know, when Red Rock West first appeared on the schedule, I was like, well, hold on a second, this is a Nicolas Cage movie. How is this on the schedule? You know, it's a bit weird. And then we was just like, you know what, we should do something for this, because you delve into it and realize, yes, there is a DVD out there. It's very expensive to buy because it's not pressed anymore. There's no Blu-ray apart from in Germany. And I thought, well, maybe we should put together some sort of package And see if we can throw some new special features on there. I mean, granted, I think we all knew that the interview, an interview with Nicolas Cage, was not happening at any point soon. So I just thought, you know what? Let's see what else we can get. So through the process of months, I mean, putting this together has been months, probably even from the end of last year, really, is when I first started reaching out to a few people. So now we have a package which I think is really good, actually. You know, minus obviously having a Nicolas Cage interview, I think we've got a decent package here. So there are new interviews on here. There's a new interview with the director, John Dahl. There is a new interview with the editor, Scott Chestnut. And there is a new interview with actor Dale Gibson, who you see very early on in the film. And then there is also a new look at Nicolas Cage, but I'm going to let somebody else do that because somebody else is better at it than me.
So, Ian, how did you become involved in this project? Like, what was kind of, how did it all come to be?
I can't remember what year it was. It was a long time ago. I got in touch with James, who runs Signal One, and I was like, could I write a booklet? And he was like, I didn't have a track record of writing booklets at that point. And he basically was like, and I was like, well, could I just write it? And if you like it, you could maybe use it. Worst case, I post it on my site, you know, or sell it to another site or whatever. So I wrote it, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, the booklet, when it was first announced. And then I got kind of, I saw it was announced that this was coming out. And I was like, oh, I did that booklet. Could that be included possibly, basically? And then I had to cut it down a bit, but that's about it, basically.
So what had you just written it for Red Rock West, not knowing that that was something on the docket? You just like,
no.
I want to write something about this film, or did you
no, it was a
know that?
It's a film I liked, but then I saw it was announced and I got in touch, so.
Nice. So yeah, what kind of things do you go into in your kind of like essay?
Oh, it's been a while since I have a quick look at it. But I mean, I go a lot into the history of the release of it. There's a fair bit about, and that was more of that as well. That got cut down a bit, but it's kind of its place in like sort of neo-noir of the time. I mean, people always kind of think of, I guess, the Coen Brothers and Tarantino from that period, who were both making, you know, essentially neo-noirs for all kinds of purposes. But John Dahl was definitely may have made the most purist sort of neo-noirs in many ways. So.
I always find that kind of the release of like Reservoir Dogs and kind of the ripping up of the rule book of like kind of how cinema would be throughout the 90s after that kind of not I don't know, like sidelined a film like this in a way. I think that's why it's kind of more of a cult film than it kind of like didn't get its just due at the time, which obviously not to say this is like one of my favorite Nicolas Cage films, like one of my favorite like early 90s movies. I think it's just fantastic. But yeah, I always like, I think I've said it before on this here podcast when I spoke to Nick Helm about it, and I said this is, you really don't get a story like this anymore. I think if this was made today, and I imagine even by John Dahl, would probably be made for a TV project. Like you could definitely see this being a 3-part, 6-part miniseries. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, let's look at his career. The guy hasn't made a film in 15 years.
Mm-hmm. But has really great kind of
high,
stellar work high on TV, right? High-end kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you speak to John Dahl about that in the interview at all, Mark?
I did, yeah. I mean, obviously, we don't want to talk about what's given away in the interview because we want people to go and buy the Blu-ray and watch the
interview. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, no,
but I spoke to John for, about an hour, something like that. And we just went through the film and then some of his career as well. We were just chatting, really. I mean, towards the end, because obviously he directed some episodes of one of my favorite TV shows, Yellowstone, So we were talking about Yellowstone as well, and he was telling me about Taylor Sheridan, because I'm a huge Taylor Sheridan fan as well. But he was just the nicest guy. That was the thing. You know, I mean, there's no reason why you wouldn't expect that anyway. But, you know, you interview some people who are maybe a bit prickly, you know. But he was brilliant. He was talking about influences and loads of other stuff. And it was just a really nice interview where it kind of felt, to be honest, it kind of felt like you were down the pub with somebody and you were just letting them go. And I think that was the good thing about it. But yeah, John was great, really good. I mean, the interview, obviously, that's on the Blu-ray, I think has come out really well. I mean, we had to take quite a bit out as well, because, you know, as I said, we were talking for an hour, but we've kept in all of the good stuff. Basically, what's happened is we've taken all of my rubbish out and me fanboying over Yellowstone and Taylor Sheridan and, you know, John Dahl working on some of the other TV shows, and kept in John talking about Red Rock West, which is obviously the most important thing.
Nice, nice. So how did it kind of, how did the interviews go? Like, in which order did you kind of nail it down each interview, Mark? Was it kind of one unlock the other, or was it an easy road to get all these interviews for this?
It was about 50-50. So Dale Gibson, who I interviewed, I found he now runs a ranch in California.
Lovely stuff.
Which, you know, it's fantastic. I found the ranch details online and sent an email in, and Dale replied back to me. And I said to him, honestly, we will be 15 minutes and that's about it. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. So I got to speak to Dale, who has some really good stories, especially about acting opposite Nicolas Cage and being picked up by Nicolas Cage as well.
Yeah, I watched all the interviews before, and that was quite amusing.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Ian. And please, somebody likes it. So
Ian's the only one of the three of us who's actually seen the
disc. It's true. At this point. Yes, yes. Ian's going to have to rate it for us all, I'm afraid. So that worked out nicely. And then I thought, well, we need somebody else. We need somebody else. You know, this is the thing. And by chance, I had noticed that Scott Chestnut, the editor, who was an editor, well, still is an editor of music videos, very popular music videos, and has worked with John Dahl a few times, had his own website. So I just thought, I'm just going to email and just say, look, I'm working on this project with these people. Are you interested in an interview? Replies back, yeah, absolutely. And then it took us a good 6 to 8 weeks to actually firm up a date and, you know, actually do the interview. And it was really good. Scott is very funny in the interview, I have to say. I'm pleased with the way it's been edited, so you don't hear me laughing a lot, because he did make me laugh quite a lot. And then I kind of had no hope for interviewing John Dahl at all, to be honest with you, because trying to find his details online or who his agent is really difficult. But because Scott has been a friend of his since school and they've worked together for so long, and I think because he'd had a nice time doing the interview with me, which yes, I guess is a positive, he said, oh, let me just text John. So he texted him while we were basically still chatting. And then about a day later, I get an email from John Dahl to say, my friend Scott has said you're interested in interviewing me about Red Rock West. I'm in New York. I'm doing some TV at the moment, but I'm back in a month's time. So I reply back to say, well, whenever you're back, if you've got time, we would love to chat. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And then it did take a while to get it firmed down with a date, and technology caused an issue as well, both ends, you know. When a podcast doesn't go right and audio goes wrong, there was those things. So it did take a long time. There were other people. I mean, I can tell you this now, actually, because obviously we're doing this. There was two other people, yeah, I did speak to on email, and both of them were happy to do it, but I never heard back from them. Like, they sent me the initial email to say, we would love to do this. And then I never heard back from them again. Now, one of them was Bill Banning, who is the owner of the Roxy Cinema in San Francisco, who was the guy who was instrumental in basically plucking this movie from obscurity and playing it nonstop in his cinema on a loop almost for months on end, even though it was still playing on HBO Max or whatever channel it was being played on.
That's been normal HBO back then.
Thank you, Ian. Just on HBO. So he was still playing it. And he's like, because he saw it and said, no, we would still like to play it. So I would have loved to have interviewed Bill Banning. And I replied back to say, great, when can we set something up? And I never heard back, which was a huge shame. And then I also got in touch with one of the producers. Obviously, the movie's got like 9 producers. But one of the producers, and forgive me if I'm pronouncing this name completely wrong. I'm just terrible at pronouncing certain names. But this is, I believe it's pronounced Sigurjon Sivatson. I believe that's right. Apologies if it's not. So he's in Hollywood. I found his company, emailed, and he replied back to say, yes, this is me. I would be happy to do it. I was like, great, this is, you know, this is somebody else who had produced John Dahl's previous work, so knew John Dahl as well and knew his work. I thought, this is great, this is fantastic, but never heard back again at all. And it was getting to the point where I thought, you know what, we're just going to have to cut these loose because I can't keep waiting and waiting because obviously, you know, behind the scenes, and I think this is part of the reason for the podcast, is that it does take a while to get the extras put together. It takes a while to get the Blu-rays pressed up. They've got to be formatted a certain way. And then obviously the printing as well, you know, Ian's booklet as well. People just think that, oh, printing a booklet, nice and easy. It's not. It's all the other bits and sending over the artwork.
It's expensive. I mean, that was one of the, it was like last minute, the booklet. It was like, basically, we could probably do it, but we're not sure. And you've got to cut it down because we only can do X amount of pages with the budget we have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the thing was, I had, for another Signal One Blu-ray, I had written something and done an interview with one of the actors. It was The Paper Chase, which has just come out on Blu-ray by Signal One. And I had done a whole booklet for it. And then obviously, you know, money is tightened and everything else. And booklets are probably the most expensive thing to produce now as well, because it's an additional cost compared to putting something on a Blu-ray, you know, a video or an audio or something else like that. So to get a printed booklet as well nowadays is quite rare, really, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and you kind of see it across the board with...
Well, I assume I can probably say this. I heard that there was a booklet for the Hudson Hawk release that was cancelled because Sony didn't like what was said in it.
Ah, right. You're going to put me on the spot. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Ian. Yes, there was a... Yeah, I had written an entire booklet. There was new interviews. There was a new written piece by me as well. And yeah, Sony basically turned around and said, you can't have any of this at all.
It was reportedly too negative, is what Dan Waters said.
Yeah, yes is the answer, is the short answer. I would love to tell you more about it, but honestly, it's just pointless. But yeah, basically Sony turned around and binned the whole thing off because they felt it was too negative, even though it wasn't negative at all. All of the new interviews were very much like, well, the film has found its audience now. People like it. It's a quirky action movie. And the piece that I had written about it was, yes, there was problems and whatever else, et cetera, but actually it's now found its audience and people around the world love Hudson Hawk, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, Sony, who, this is another thing that people probably don't realize, is that a lot of things have to go back to the studio to be checked and gone through lawyers and everything else like that. So Sony turned around and said, no, sorry, you can't use any of this. So yeah, it was too negative any of it. So yeah, Dan Waters was right, and I interviewed Dan Waters for the booklet, and he was brilliant. But this is another thing: is that you do all of these special features, and it's great, and you think, oh, this is good, I like this, and then all of a sudden you get told, no, sorry, you can't have anything at all.
That is interesting, because I said some really liable things I'm joking. Obviously, I did contribute to this.
Is this a Sony
well.
Film? So sorry, Sony.
It's a Universal film.
Oh, okay, we're fine.
Maybe that. Yeah. Yeah. I say tons of liable.
I was thinking because I think the DVD was Sony originally here, and now Universal owns it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, so I am featured on this disc as well, which like gives me a chance to publicly say this. I've probably messaged Mark this tons of times saying thank you, but I'll say it on the podcast. Thank you, Mark. I randomly got a phone call, a message saying, can I call you? And I like, normally when people say that, I'm a bit skeptical, but when Mark's like, there's something exciting, and then said, would you be up for doing a special feature on the Red Rock West release? And I, as somebody who countlessly, you could probably check back through my Twitter and see me champion this film and kind of say like, when's this getting a boutique Blu-ray release? When's this getting a release in the UK? For this to be the first ever feature, first ever feature I've got to do for a disc is mind blowing. And I think you sent me yesterday, Mark, at the time of recording, or a couple of days ago, a review of this release, and the quote I picked out, and I think will be chiseled onto my headstone, is it says funny and irreverent in regards to my video essay, which I think
that the Simon Kennedy review,
possibly, yes, yeah.
Who I'm not in touch with, but he said nice things about me, so I have met him.
I mean, we just hope that, you know, all of the stuff that we've put together, me, Petros, Ian, people like. That's the thing. And it's for a film that all three of us really like as well. Mm-hmm. I think Petros probably the most. But it's the fact that...
I like it quite a lot. It's probably my favourite Nicolas Cage performance.
But this is the thing, is that this is a discussion that certainly Petros and I have had as well, Ian, is that, you know, it is up there. Regardless of whatever you think about, you know, 90s Nicolas Cage being an action hero and then leaving Las Vegas and then his B-movies and his subsequent renaissance over the past year, it's still top. I think most people would say top 10. Probably most people would say top 5 because it is something different. I think that's the thing about it.
And he does it go up particularly over the top. There's like one or two moments where he was like, this line about Mexico is a bit of this classic sort of Cage rage, but besides that, he's pretty subdued in the whole thing.
Yeah, it's something I obviously won't talk about too much, but I talk about that kind of phenomenon of Nicolas Cage, and something I've kind of coined on the podcast is earned freakouts. And I think this is like the prime example of times when he gets a chance to do those big, loud line deliveries, but they feel earned within the context of the film. Like there's other films where it just feels like a director doesn't quite know what to do with him, and it's just kind of like, yeah, we won't do any more takes. Like maybe not. And that's probably more of the kind of straight to VOD fare that he's put out. Whereas this, like, I'm sure the situation that he's in, him shouting "fuck Mexico," feels very earned because of the kind of like tumultuous times he's been put through by Lara Flynn Boyle's character and J.T. Walsh's character. So yeah, I will defend that line to the hilt. I think it's an earned.
I think
Mexico.
I think there is. You can easily make some sort of direct correlation between the Rage Cage years, which, you know, I probably guess was still going on, to the 1990s shouty Al Pacino years, and yet then you have the 70s Al Pacino years compared to the Nicolas Cage 1990s years, where you have them doing very different things that are not all the same. So, you know, as I said, Cage, Con Air, but then Leaving Las Vegas, Red Rock West, all very different movies. Pacino, well, The Godfather.
Is it his film after this, Deadfall?
Same year, yeah.
Which is like the most out of the world, insane Nicolas Cage performance of all time.
And he's directed by his brother, who probably isn't as kind of hard on him as a director who doesn't know him that well. Like, not that that film is fascinating and amazing in its own way. And yeah, I know that Christopher Coppola has listened to this podcast. So Chris, if you're listening, please come on.
And we all like that film. It's a very special film in our hearts.
Yes, of course. So as we start to like wind things down, what kind of, I don't know, if people are kind of on the fence listening to this, never seen Red Rock West, because obviously this is the perfect opportunity for people to now watch it, especially here in the UK. If you're listening, and I know, obviously, none of us have any involvement in it, but I think it's recently been announced as well that it's getting a Blu-ray release in the States as well. So obviously it'll give people a chance there.
Is that Kino?
I'm not really too sure. I've seen it announced on like one of those Twitter pages, like Just the Discs or something like that.
And it feels like it would be something Kino would definitely do.
Yeah, but at the moment it hasn't been announced who's putting it out, just says it's coming, like everything's TBC with that one. But what kind of films would you kind of say would be, if you seen this?
Well, obviously, like, if you've seen Last Seduction and Kill Me Again, I think most people probably have seen Last Seduction, which is probably his second best, and some people probably would say is his best film. Although I'm sure the twist in that film probably wouldn't play as well in some audiences. And then obviously all the Tarantino stuff like the Grifters, the James Foley stuff from that time, like After Dark, My Sweet, and that Close Range. But yeah, if you like film noir and neo-noir stuff, I'm sure you'd probably get out of it.
What about you, Mark? Any kind of recommendation?
I mean, it's really difficult to top what Ian has said there, really. He's hit the nail on the head many times. I mean, the closest I would say is some of the stuff that Tarantino did, you know, True Romance, I would say, something like that. But yeah, anything neo-noir, which obviously is a very small genre these days, unfortunately.
Well, it's all on TV.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The best neo-noir is now on TV, but let's be honest, most of the best stuff now is on TV anyway. And that, obviously that's where John Dahl is working his best magic nowadays. Can't get a film made, but is instead making some amazing TV. Yeah, I don't know. I think Ian's completely right in the films that he's chosen there.
And maybe the Drew Barrymore Gun Crazy remake, well, quasi-remake, which is what kind of is why Red Rock West got a release, because that was the first film that he used as a, that was on TV, the distributor guy in San Francisco. He plucked out of obscurity, and that played for like 6 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. Which is not great film, but it's not a bad film by any stretch.
And I would definitely say, like, kind of, I don't know, if you're a fan of like the Coen brothers, like there's very much like the, especially like Blood Simple, even like Raising Arizona, even though like this is not like that comedic, like Red.
I've always said all of the Coen brothers films are crime films.
Yeah. And I think there's a nice correlation between like, especially those two towards Red Rock West. So I think if you kind of, you like what the Coen brothers do.
Well, I noticed that the New Beverly recently, Nicolas Cage programmed two films, and it was Red Rock West and Bringing Out the Dead. It's double bill.
Oh, man, I love Bringing Out the Dead. It was released here in the UK on my birthday, and I went to see it on my birthday, and everybody who came with me thought I was absolutely mental for going to see this movie.
That's the next one that needs a heavy push.
It does. You're right. Absolutely.
Disney
boutique release.
It is. Yes, yeah, it's Disney. So
well, when I interviewed a film with Schoonemaker once, and I asked, you know, what do you think is like the great unsung Scorsese film, and so he singled out Bringing Out the Dead.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a quasi sequel to, or like a tonal sequel to Taxi Driver, right? It's kind of,
well, Paul Schrader wrote the script, so
yeah. So I mean, it's those two guys back together. It's about a guy. It's both about a guy kind of struggling in inner city New York.
He's a night worker
in different ways.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we could talk about other great Nicolas Cage films for hours, but. Yeah, thank you both for joining me for this conversation. Just kind of get the word out about this. So Mark, where can people keep up to date with you, whether it's more releases or reviews and stuff like that? Where's best to find you?
So I'm online. So marksearby.com is my website. It's a static website. It's just got stuff that I've done through the years. I'm on Twitter, Mark_Searby, and then also on the radio here in the UK, BBC Northampton on a Sunday, BBC Suffolk on a Saturday as well, doing the weekly film reviews. And then obviously doing some extras from time to time for Signal One as well. We've got some stuff in the pipeline that hopefully will be released. As Ian said, some stuff was cancelled. But hopefully this stuff won't be, because it's not Sony. So we're fingers crossed for it.
Nice. And what about yourself, Ian? Where can people keep up to date with
you? I'm on Twitter under Psychotronic Cinema. I think it's Psychotronic CI1 or whatever. I've got my own site called Psychotronic Cinema. I've just started doing stuff for Film Hounds magazine. I did an interview with John Waters. It's actually in print. So you can buy for a fiver. Well, he says my parents were very transgressive. Was just saying something from John Waters. And I do stuff for like D-movies. Those are the kind of the two main places besides my place at the moment.
Amazing. Well, yeah, before we go, there's one thing I have to say to people who are listening. Go out and buy a copy of Red Rock West out now on Signal One. It's as I said, I haven't got the physical disc here, but from knowing the film, from knowing what I've contributed to it, I'm very proud of the video essay I did, considering, again, we could probably get into the whole kind of tumultuous nature of that coming to be. There was supposed to be like some stuff to camera. There was like, I literally had to figure out how to edit. So this is kind of my debut of doing a video essay, as well as kind of editing it, making sure it's in the right file formats to be included on a Blu-ray disc. I was kind of, there was a lot more hair before I started this journey to being on this disc. But yeah, make sure you go out and get yourselves a copy, because it's a great release.
It is, and you both did really good jobs.
Thanks, Ian. That's much appreciated. It's very kind. I'm looking forward to reading your work as well. That's the one thing I haven't read. That's the thing. You know, I've heard the commentary, which is on the track, by the way. It's an old commentary. I've seen obviously all of the subsequent material as well. I've seen the film about several times now. The only thing I have not seen is your writing. So I'm looking forward to getting a copy.
Well, I'll send you both a copy of the booklet.
Oh, I like a promo. I do.
Oh, lovely, lovely. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. And yeah, just having a little peek behind the curtain with this release.
Thanks, Petros.
This podcast is presented by the Breadcrumbs Collective, home of the Podcharles Cinecast, Caged In Coppola Connections, A Droop Town Limerie, Maine, Franchised, and many more to come. Our shows are all presented ad-free and made possible by listeners like you. Please support our shows by subscribing, leaving ratings and reviews, and becoming patrons at patreon.com. If you'd like to learn more about Breadcrumbs, head over to breadcrumbscollective.com.
Breadcrumbs. It's more than a podcast network. It's family.